Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Good evening. Have a wonderful Shabbat to one and all. It's a pleasure to be with you. We're here with Dee and Kirk. It has been a wild week again. Israel is splitting apart at the seams. I don't think that Israel will even approach a unified government again. There's way too much animosity. The country now, the latest polls have some 70% of Israelis want Benjamin Netanyahu to resign. And we've talked about this a lot on this program. I'm not a Netanyahu fan. I think he's had his moments where he has done some good things. And at this point, I think he is the best that Israel has to offer. But he is so compromised by the crazies in his coalition, particularly the ultra-Orthodox and Haredim, that it's very difficult to govern. And anything that he does that is purely beneficial for Israel, one or the other threatens to to walk away from the coalition, which brings the government down. I really despise the parliamentary system. I think that the bribes that go along with forming coalitions is disastrous for a country. I think it creates a very dishonest mix, and the people never get to actually elect their own government. The government is cobbled together through lots and lots of small parties, and Israel is really suffering from that. Of course, Israel has a double whammy, maybe a triple whammy. It has a quadruple whammy, you want to think about it. It has no constitution. So how in the world do you govern a country without a constitution? It has no Bill of Rights, and it has a high court that is without restraint. And so in the United States, the Supreme Court is constrained to ruling on matters of the U.S. Constitution and can't rule on any matter outside of it. And yet in Israel, they can strike down any legislation, so they become de facto dictators over the country, and none of them are elected. So they have a real problem with their high court. They have a real problem with having no constitution. They have a real problem in that about 20% of the population, the Muslims, want the country destroyed. Even though Muslims living in Israel are some of the freest and best educated in the world, and one of the few places where Islam and Jews coexist, where both sides have rights, where Jews have absolutely no rights in any Islamic country and are hunted down and tortured and killed. It is astonishing, though, with all of that, and then the fact that you have the nation so riddled with fundamentalist Islamic groups, whether it be Hamas carved out of one side and the PLO and Islamic Jihad carved out of the other side and peppered all through the country are those that are devoting their lives to dying, killing Jews. So it is really an impossible country to govern. The borders are not defensible, and the country is, as a matter of no more than 3 years away from a catastrophic war, a war far more devastating to Israel than 1948, 67, 73, or what happened on October 7th. It'll be October 7th times 100, maybe times 1,000. But it's a war that the IDF cannot fight. For those who have read the most recent report out of Israel, the IDF did a mea culpa on Berry, which was the deadliest place other than the Rave to be when Islamic terrorists invaded. And for the most part, the IDF took seven and a half hours to respond. They flew very, very few helicopters, and the helicopters they flew didn't even know what they were doing, didn't know who the good guys were, the bad guys were totally confused. They finally brought a couple of tanks in, and when one of the two tanks ended up blowing up a home filled with Israeli hostages. It was just a travesty of errors. The first units that went in turned tail and ran. The second unit that went in turned tail and ran. This idea of risking your life to defend your country obviously did not permeate into the IDF soldiers who at the time, on October 7th, were called into action. The government itself was completely comatose and asleep. It bothers me a great deal that Gallant and Helvecki, the two most senior people over the IDF, point the finger and blame other people when there are no two people in Israel more at fault than them for the seven-hour delay for the IDF responding. And then, of course, the head of the Shin Bet and Mossad are still empowered. They don't have the decency to resign, but they did all manner of wrong, and everyone at the top of those organizations should have resigned and resigned immediately. So those are four heads that should have rolled over this, mm-hmm. because that report is just devastating as to how poorly the IDF performed. There are new numbers out from the IDF that show that trauma for soldiers having served now 9 months, no one served 9 months, but some have served five, 6, and 7 months in Gaza, is exceedingly high, and that the combination of casualties and psychiatric issues is about 20% of the IDF at this point, and it'll only get worse. And that is because it's just like America's invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. Not that what happened there obviously pales in comparison to what the Islamic terrorists did in Israel. And America was not fighting for its survival. Israel is, so to be fair here. But when you're sent on a mission where the people you are told to protect want to kill you, the trauma of that is impossible to bear. That's why there was such a high percentage of PTSD among American servicemen that fought in mm-hmm. Afghanistan and Iraq, is they were told that they were providing liberty and freedom for people who wanted to kill them. And the same thing is true in Gaza. There are no innocent mm-hmm. civilians in Gaza. Everybody with half a brain knows there are no innocent civilians in Gaza. And, you know, when the United Nations is part of the terror organization, right? Yesterday they found yet another Hamas headquarters within a United Nations university. They had classrooms set up to make bombs. They had intersecting tunnels. They had planning headquarters, weapon stashes everywhere. And this is in a UN building that makes them complicit in terror. It's a situation the world has never witnessed before. And the rage over anti-Israel rage is so great that Israel is sacrificing the blood of its and the minds, the souls of its sons and daughters in a winless war while the world turns against them and rages against them. It's exactly what we said was going to happen on October 7th and 8th when I wrote the open letter to Israel and subsequently published it inside of the Yada Yada site and then did a number of radio programs on it. It is precisely what we said was going to happen, and it has happened. Israel has made one mistake after another. Now, that's not to say that I'm anti-Israel. I've risked my life and will continue to risk my life on behalf of Israel. I just want for Israel better leadership, an awareness of how many things that they are doing wrong and the consequence of those things. In fact, my life is devoted to awakening Israel to the identity of their God and the identity of their Messiah. The Son of God and Messiah is Dod. He is the King of Israel. He is the one who fulfilled Pesach and Matzah, leading to Bukurim. He is our Savior, and he is our Shepherd. And there's not one Israeli in a million that knows this. Mm-hmm. And until there is an acceptance of Yahweh by name, an understanding of the conditions and the benefits of the covenant, an acceptance of the seven Moed Mikre and what each represent, and when they were and will be fulfilled and by whom, there really is no hope for the country. And our mission is to change that. By way of update, well, I want to say one other thing before I give you an update. That is that one of the interesting things about the Berry report by the IDF is that Hamas militants were a distinct minority of those who attacked Berry. And the attack on Berry was probably the most coordinated of any because it was just circumstance, happenstance that they came into the Nova. So Berry was the most coordinated attack orchestrated by Hamas. And Hamas represented a very distinct minority of the militants. And so Israel constantly says, we're here to fight Hamas. But I'm here to tell you that even the IDF's own numbers said that the largest segment of terrorists was from Islamic Jihad. The second largest group were just common civilian criminals. And then there were non-regular Hamas for a day. You know, you've got a chance to be a martyr today. Go Shaheed for today. And the minority were actually those who were part of Hamas's military wing. So it's a very different situation than most people recognize. By way of update, David has posted Goddamn Religion 5. So all five volumes now are up on the site. It is a real sense of completion for me. I spent 8 months of my life devoted to that, 12, 13, 14 hours a day, 6 and 7 days a week to getting that done. It's my gift to Israel. I am looking forward to doing a number of things with it. We'll find a replacement printer for the morons at Amazon. More than just morons. There's beyond being inept at Amazon. There's a grotesque immorality and incompetence that is part of that organization. But we will find a replacement for them. But between now and then, the books are beautifully presented on the website, and I thank you, David, for having done that. On Twistianity, which is the rewrite of Questioning Paul, I'm about 250 pages into Volume 1. I've written about 350 pages, but I pulled almost 100 pages out. We're talking about it now. I'm moving it into what will be Coming Home 4, And I've taken a the approach that I thought I would originally, which is after I went through and began to criticize Paul and prove that he was a false prophet and what he was saying was untrue, and that he misquoted Yahweh and manipulated the text to create the inference that God said exactly the opposite of what he actually did, I decided that I would dedicate a very long chapter, it'll probably be 150-plus pages when it's done, to Sadok, to Dode, to what Yahweh has to say about Dode. So there is a beautiful presentation of the 18th chapter of Devarim, the prophet who will come after Moshe is Dode. And then that text does a really nice job of explaining why he has to come, because God's people and humankind had become disgustingly religious. So it condemns religion and politics, presents Dode as the answer to that, and then goes in to explain how we can tell what is true and what is false. You know, I've had people get upset with me because I have condemned the first half of Daniel and completely condemned the book of Ezekiel, but it's not hard to do. God gave us a very clear-cut tool to use to determine who was speaking for him and who was not. And since I trust Yahweh, I use that tool, and it's easy to determine what he did not inspire him. It's a shame that rabbis have not been able to use it. But then from there, I go into the 89th Mizmor, and by the time you're like 15 verses into the 89th Psalm, you have proven conclusively that Dode is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. He is the chosen one. He is the Zeruah sacrificial lamb. He is God's chosen implement to save humankind, starting with the covenant family. So there is just no question that, that Dode is it. There's no one else that that is spoken of in this way. And God says, goes all the way to say that Dode becomes essentially equivalent to God. You know, that's how the psalm ends, but there's even a statement in the early part of it that Yahweh says that I enabled him in such a way that he became compatible with me and my likeness. So, you know, the Dode who's going to be king is going to be an exceedingly extraordinary individual. And before we freak out and say, wait a minute, you know, it's one thing to work for and report to a brother who is the best of us, who was elevated to king for the purpose of really acknowledging his great sacrifice on behalf of the family. It's another thing to be working for someone who is equivalent to God, because that's, you know, that's, you'd think that that would be intimidating, but and not to fret. What God does for Dode, through Dode, he does for the rest of us, which means that just as Dode is going to be very comparable, exceedingly comparable, in many ways equal and like God, so will we. That's the whole purpose of him elevating us from three dimensions to seven dimensions, enlightening us, enriching us, empowering us, is so we will be also exceedingly more capable than we are at this point. The other just item of the news is it is a just really a comedy, a great tragedy, I guess, to watch the implosion of Joe Biden. It is something that I talked about at length on this program 5 years ago, that I thought it was a great injustice and disservice for his handlers, including his wife, to allow him to run for president of the United States when it was obvious that he had a very severe mental deficiency. You know, it's not a crime to have a mental deficiency, but it is a crime to empower someone, enable someone to run for president of the United States with a mental deficiency. The couple of events just today, you know, after calling himself the first female black vice president, he introduced at the NATO summit, he introduced Zelensky as President Putin.
Wow.
It's just, and I listened to his whole speech. He's slurring all of his words, and then he introduces Zelensky as the President Putin. He tried to recover from the that horrific debate non-performance where he really needed a nap by doing a Stephanopoulos interview, and then they catch Stephanopoulos 2 days later on the street, and they ask him, you know, what did you think? And he says, I can't even imagine that guy performing as president for another term.
Wow.
And Stephanopoulos is, you know, a flag-waving liberal. And then they tried to set up a new radio conglomerate, a syndicate, to interview him to, you know, showcase the bright and articulate Joe Biden. And so they did they didn't want to interview him live because that's too risky. You know, it's Weekend at Bernie's after all. So they wanted to do a pre-recorded interview. They did, and the White House had the audacity to say, we want to edit the interview. We want you to take this 1 to 2 minute segment out. We want you to take this segment out. We want you to change this. They wanted them the right to edit the interview and take out where he stumbled.
Wow, that's so deceptive.
And the syndicate did. And then the owner of the syndicate, after being saying, wait a minute, how can you call yourself a news organization and do this? He came out and wrote a whole long open letter and say, here's what actually happened. This is what he said. This is what the administration asked us to take out. You imagine you have an administration of the president of the United States asking the media to change something the president said in an interview. It's like Kennedy saying, you know, it's ask not what you can do. And no, I don't want to say it like that. Can we edit that, please? Can you roll the toilet paper back? The Gettysburg Address, four score. And well, that was a three score or how many? How long is the score, really? What was the score of that game? I am your first black female vice president.
Okay.
No, it's just so sad. And, you know, who are they going to run? I mean, Kamala Harris is got to be the least qualified vice president in history. And that's saying something because, well, we had Dan Quayle. And then, you know, they're talking about Newsom from California. But can you imagine how fun it would be to run against Newsom? All you'd have to do is run commercials showing California. This is a street in downtown Los Angeles. This is one in San Francisco. Do you want America like this? Is this the America that that you are voting for? If so, he's your guy. Drugs
coming
for
soon,
everybody.
Vote Newsom.
Free crime for Newsom. What are they going to do? Oh, they got one guy that was still in the race as an independent, Kennedy Jr. He was accused of having some kind of sexual indiscretion with a woman. And you know what his response was? He says, I told you I had all sorts of skeletons in my closet. I've done horrible things. Why are you surprised?
Wow.
Welcome to our world. Yeah, it's your world, not mine. No, it's not yours, but other people's.
Yeah.
We are going to return to Hosha. We had moved into Hosha 6-2. It was a really an interesting statement that very few people have taken the time to understand. And I think it's appropriate for this program. It reads, through 2 days, he will choose to revive and sustain lives. On the third day, he will establish our restoration, encouraging and raising us so we can stand up and endure. Then we will live in his presence. Okay, first question. Has that occurred?
Not all of it.
First two, yes.
Yeah, not much of it has occurred. We are not living in Yahweh's presence.
No.
Right.
And Israel has not been restored, and there are no Yehudim of any consequence standing and enduring with God.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is future.
Right.
And the timing is really interesting. So there really are some different ways to interpret the timing of this statement. The most direct is to see it within the scope of what is being presented in Yirmiyah 31. That's the prophecy that in a previous program we considered. And that's the prophecy that pertains to the reestablishment and the reaffirmation of the covenant between Yisrael and Yehudim and Yahweh, where he reconciles his family relationship on the Day of Reconciliations, and this time different than the one not with Abraham, because it's identical with the one with Abraham. It is different than as he expressed his covenant through the Exodus with the children of Yisrael, where he grabbed them kicking and screaming. This time, you'll either choose to be with Yahweh or not at all. He is not going to drag you to your salvation this time. And second is the Torah won't be made available. It's going to literally be integrated into our lives. So I think that this prophecy pertains to what was presented in Yirmiyah 31. I think that is when it is being fulfilled. Now, this means that what will transpire over the 2 days, which would be Teruah and Kippurim, in the 120th Yobel year of 6000 Yah in 2023, will lead to living in Yahweh's presence on the third day. So I think this statement fits beautifully into the realization that Teruah is an olive harvest of some, 70,000, we hope that it reaches that number, of Yehudim and Yisraelites. But it's all
sense.
Yisraelites and Yehudim 10 days before Yahweh's return, followed by the remnant that reaches up and looks up to Yahweh, anticipating his return on Yom Kippurim, so that on the third day, those who were part of those two harvests can celebrate an eternity with Yahweh and throughout the millennial kingdom. Those who were part of the Shavua harvest will be witnesses to all of this, and I think that we will have the opportunity to live on this beautiful blue planet over that 1,000 years as it transitions from being corrupted by religion and politics and conspiracy and pollution and all these kinds of things into the conditions experienced in Eden. But I think we will also have the opportunity to go explore the universe during that 1,000 years as well. So it is far better to, if you're a listener, to participate in the Shavua harvest than wait for these 3 days. But these 3 days, I think, is what is being spoken of here is that that Teruah, which is the 25th of September, a Shabbat, it will be a solar eclipse, by the way, announcing this day, the first day of the seventh month in year 6000 Yah, September 25th at sunset, a Friday evening in Israel, as religious Jews and secular Jews are celebrating Rosh Hashanah. Yahweh is going to glean a remnant of his people. And then 10 days later, Yahweh is returning with the Messiah and Son of God, the most important human in history of our planet, a man who is going to be as brilliant as the sun as he returns, Dote. And he will anoint the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. He will rid Israel of all of her enemies. He will do lots of delegating. That's kind of the difference between Moshe and Dode. Moshe tried to do it all himself. But, you know, that was a straggling group and herding these irascible children through the desert. Dode was a delegator. He had staff to do things and generals who'd help him fight his battles. I think Dode will continue to be a delegator. Yahweh is a delegator, which you wouldn't think that God himself would delegate, but he does. He likes to work through people, and he delegates responsibilities that he expects us to do, and he helps. He's an engaged delegator, and I think Dode will be to a large degree as well. But it is that period that I think is being spoken of here. So this means that what will transpire over the 2 days of Teruah and Kippurim in the 120th Yobel year of 6000 Yah, which is in 2033, will lead to living in Yahweh's presence on the third day in Sukkah. Now, and that will be for 1,000 years. Considering that the subject is the revival and the preservation of our lives, leading to a time when we are established and restored in our relationship with God, such that we can stand in Yahweh's presence, I think this is the most obvious answer a statement I think that has caused many to scratch their heads over the years. So while our lives are extended during Pesach, they are restored during Matzah, so that on Bukurim we become part of Yahweh's covenant family. Since he is addressing actually living in Yahweh's presence, our Father's presence, it has to be speaking of how the Teruah olive harvest of Yehudim on September 25th, 2033, will prepare the way for Yahweh and Dode's arrival on Yom Kippurim, leading to camping out together on Sukkah. It is then that they will engage to free the earth of those who no longer belong, all while reconciling the final remnant of Jews back into the covenant. However, the earth will be in the throes of death, and evil will be exploding as never before. The prophets say there is never has been or ever will be a time like this again, which means that it's October 7th times 100, perhaps 1,000.
Right.
There will be a lot to eliminate, be a lot to terraform before the planet is restored to the Eden-like conditions that we will enjoy when living in Yahweh's presence. And that begins on the third day, Sukkah, camping out. So that would have the first three Moed Mikre all fulfilled in year 4000 Yah, and the final three Moed Mikre, invitations to be called out and meet with God, fulfilled in year 6000, with Shavuah being the one outlier in the middle, and it then being fulfilled 7 years before Yahweh's return, which would put it in the 22nd of May, another Shabbat, in the year 2026, with this horrendous war that will break out within Israel occurring just 13 months after that date. The message
very
of Teruah.
Nicely explained.
Thank you. Well, we've been working on this a great deal, and I had occasion in the fifth volume of Goddamn Religion to share a timeline with Israel. I wrote Goddamn Religion on behalf of Israel to try to save God's people from their most aggressive threat, which is Islam, which has been at war with them for the last 1,400 years. And so there's a very long chapter in it that called The Voice, which is designed to call Israel home by walking them through what to expect over this next 9 to 10 years. That then was part of the first volume of Twistianity as I was writing it. And then I realized that this was branching out into so many interesting places that I could no longer contain it, and it just didn't belong in a book devoted to destroying the credibility of the Christian religion. And so I've moved it out, and it will be a part of the beginning of what will be Coming Home Volume 4, which we'll work on shortly. All the while,
nice.
I am adding another 100-plus pages to Twistianity, as I shared, that is focused on Doubt, on who he is, what his role has been, what his role will be, what Yahweh has to say about him, because there is no Jesus. There never was a Jesus. There isn't even a Yosha. Such an individual never existed. It was Dode who fulfilled these events, and Jesus is a function of replacement theology. A myth has replaced the most important individual in human history. So as we constantly do these things and we try to do what I think is the biggest challenge that there is to Yahweh's testimony, it is work to correctly translate his message both accurately and completely, and to do so over a great swath of prophetic testimony. It's another thing to understand how the pieces fit together, because no one prophet provides the entire picture. And so you have to piece the picture together to develop an understanding of what's going to occur moving forward. And as we do that, that's I think the biggest challenge is to come up with conclusions deduced from the evidence that fit everything God had to say.
Right.
And I've been doing this now for 23 years, and we're still learning. So it is the ultimate challenge, I think, and this particular passage is now presented as God intended. So the message of Teruah, which is an olive harvest, I'm expecting that Teruah is something that I will have the opportunity to share responsibility for. One of the things that is quite striking as we look at these two harvests, really a harvest, a gleaning, and a family reunion would probably be the best way to describe this, that Shavuah is the bountiful harvest of prominent and mature grain representing both Israelites and Goyim. And then Teruah, which is all Israelites and Yehudim, a much smaller number of people and very late into the process. And then their final remnant of Israel reaching up and welcoming Yahweh and Dod back home on Kippurim. As we look through those and we assess what is our role, I think that I finally embraced what it means to be the third Zeruah as it relates particularly to Shavuah, and what it means to be the Choder as it relates to Teruah. And if you look at Zeruah, the protective ram that led the flock out of the cauldrons of political and religious oppression and Egypt, Moshe, one of the greatest men who ever lived. And he was a highly protective ram leading the flock. The second Zeruah is the greatest man who ever lived. He is Yahweh's Gabor, Yahweh's firstborn son, his chosen one, Dod. And Dod was also a strong arm, which is one of the connotations of Zeruah. He was also a ram leading the flock as the king of Israel. But the Torah's definition of Zeruah is to be the sacrificial lamb. And so Dod is the sacrificial lamb. His corporeal body that was reconstituted for this purpose became the sacrifice on Pesach in year 4000, 33 CE. And then his nephesh soul carried our guilt into Sheol to deposit it there. The makes him the epitome of what it is to be a Zoroah. But there's a third Zoroah. And that fellow just happens to be Yada. And it's he gets addressed quite often, and there are places where this Zoroah is Dode Zoroah. It's actually framed as he's Dode Zoroah. So what does that mean, and how can somebody who is so inferior to Moshe and Dode be considered with the same title? And for that, we look at the verbal root of Zoroah. You guys know what the verbal root of Zoroah is?
Recognize.
Oh, you got me.
Yeah, it's a far cry from arm. It's a far cry from ram. It is a million miles from sacrificial lamb. It's Zera. And Zera means
I did know that.
Seeds,
I've read
it. Sow seeds that take root and grow. So what is the third Zoroah's job? It is to sow the seeds that become the harvest. So he's sowing the seed that becomes the teruah harvest, and ultimately as the choder, which is the secondary branch, becomes the source of the teruah harvest, leading to Kippurim, where at that point you've got Elia in full sarcastic mode, bringing the remnant of Yehudim to the final party. I think at that time I can probably bring up a lawn chair and just applaud as he does his work. But at this point, the reason for the Zoroah title is because the third Zoroah represents the verbal root of Zoroah, which is one who sows the seeds that grow and become the harvest. And that is the role that that we are playing here. And the interesting thing, too, is that Dode doesn't appear to have nearly as much to do with the Shavuah harvest as he does with the Teruah harvest, where the Teruah harvest is really all about him. Because Teruah means to shout out a message of warning and a message of great joy. The great joy is that Dode's returning. The warning is, if you're religious and political, you're in serious trouble. It's, you know, I've always viewed my whole life, because I was called to do this mission almost 23 years ago on Teruah, that that is our mission. But as a Zoroah, our mission is even more to prepare the seeds that take root and grow for Shavuah. And the reason that Dode is not an integral part of Shavuah is he's already done everything he needed to do. Shavuah really is the fruit of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim.
Yep.
And so we're taking what Dode has done. We're taking what Yahweh has said about Dode. We're the first ever, 3,000 years, to make these connections, to affirm this profound truth that Dode is our Savior. He's not just the Messiah and Son of God. He's not just the returning King. He's not just the great prophet. He's not just Yahweh's chosen one, the branch. He is, quite literally, our Savior. He is the one who fulfilled Pesach and Matzah leading to Bikurim. He's done that work. It's our job to sow the seeds of this profound truth so that both loaves of bread, Goyim and Yehudim, can know the truth, accept it, and benefit from it. So as we return back to focused on Dode, we find Teruah leading to and announcing Kippurim, which leads to Sukkah, just as Pesach opens the door for the perfection of Matzah, and that leads to Bikurim, firstborn children. Now, there is another way, and it's fair to say, to appreciate the merit of these 3 days. 2,000 years transpired from year 2000 Yah to the time when, which was the time the covenant was confirmed with Abraham and Yitzhak on Mount Moriah, to year 4,000 Yah, which is two symbolic days, when the benefits were provided with Dode's fulfillment of Chag Matzah, enabling us to participate in the benefit of the covenant. Under this scenario, the third day is symbolic of the millennial celebration of the Shabbat of Sukkah in year 6,000 Yah to 7,000 Yah, while Passover and unyeasted bread leading to Bikurim remain an essential part of the way home and to living with God, nary one in a million Jews has capitalized on this offer. In fact, up to the time we began Yada Yahwa, it might have been correctly stated that none answered the call. And all of this, the entire purpose of Hosha, indeed, of Yirmiyah, of Yashiyah, of Zechariah, Yoel, is to make Yahweh's people aware of their opportunity to reconcile the relationship so that they can be part of the covenant family. Everything is pointing to this moment when, after Yahweh returns for his family, we enjoy our return to Eden. So it's reassuring to see Yahweh affirming what I have deduced and shared, because we know our God is investing the time and effort for us to be able to learn who he is, what he is offering, and what he expects in return so we can share it correctly. And in this case, at this time and for this purpose, he is quite literally directing his people to Yada Yahweh. We want to know. We desire information so that we are aware. We want to be perceptive, discerning, and discriminating. We choose to invest considerable time and effort to pursue Yada Yahweh, knowing Yahweh. This stage of his journey is as sure as sunrise. He will come like the showers of spring rains as they enable the gathering of the harvest by refreshing and renewing of those of the land who accept the source of teaching and the guidance which is on display. Hosha 6:3. I started this adventure with Yahweh just shy of 23 years ago on a teruah. At the time, I did not know his name. I had thought I had progressed from a Christian to an agnostic. And then over time, gradually realized that Christianity was as false as is Judaism and Islam, and that Yahweh was anti-religious. And I, you know, if I go back now and read some of what I wrote 23 years ago, boy, it's amazing that Yahweh just didn't give up and say, we may have made a mistake here. this guy is really not the sharpest tool. Can we find another one?
Everybody stands in line, though.
But, you know, boy, I tell you what, that was certainly the truth as I went back and edited what was The Prophet of Doom, turning it into the five volumes of Goddamn Religion. And now as I'm redoing Twistianity, that's already undergone about eight different edits, as I read through things, I said, oh, my God, did I really say that? It is amazing.
2020, Yada.
Yes, it's amazing what Yahweh can do with imperfect tools. But there are some things that have been extraordinary. One of those things that is extraordinary is that over the past 2,500 years, I think we're the first to properly pronounce Yahweh's name and to share it with the world. Now, that's pretty extraordinary. 2,500 years was the last time someone, his name was Malachi Messenger, actually said Yahweh's name. Now, my guess is, I wouldn't make my guess, I'd be assured that Daoud, when he was here, but he didn't write anything on this visit. He wrote about what he was going to endure 1,000 years before he endured it, and most certainly he used Yahweh's name. So Yahweh's name was said 2,000 years ago. So I should shorten that timeline to 2,000 years, but it's the first time in 2,000 years that Yahweh's name has been used and correctly pronounced, as well as explained as to how you go about pronouncing it and what each of the letters in his name represent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time in 2,000 years that each of the seven Moed Mikre have been explained, what each of them represent, how they pertain to the covenant, to Yisrael, and to the relationship Yahweh is striving to achieve with us, the first time that any of them have been properly dated, much less all of them, including the four yet to be fulfilled. It's the first time that the five benefits and five conditions of the covenant have been explained and how they have been correlated with the Mikre. And then the greatest discovery of all is the recognition that Daoud is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. He is our Savior. He is the Zeruah. He is the sacrificial lamb. He fulfilled Pesach and Matzah leading to Bukurim. It's the greatest discovery, really, in human history. So to have one person who really started off very, very roughly, crudely, come up with thousands of insights that have just started to name a few. That took a lot of work on Yahweh's part. He had to, he did something that has only been done once in history. He offered all seven spirits of Yah to make this possible. And so this is a very big deal to Yahweh. And there are places that we have been right from day one, and other places we have developed a refinement of what we can
right.
say for certain. And one of the places that where we began is Yada Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
To know Yahweh, I chose the name duplume of Yada because I liked being anonymous. That was always my preference. It is not Yahweh's preference. Yahweh picks people to work through, and he is very vocal about who he picks. And so he picked Yada. Who would have thought that guy that was so ill-informed some 23 years ago would have picked that name? And then he would name the entire family of books, this radio program, and everything we do in terms of our outreach, Yada Yahweh. And here we find it written just that way in Hosha, speaking specifically of this time, of our mission and what we are doing to enable Yisrael and Yehudim to be able to stand with God, restored in that relationship. Yada Yahweh. It's right there. That's an extraordinary affirmation. By saying it, I think God is telling his people, please read it. We want to know. Da is a cognitive knowing. Information is processed. The person is deceptive. They make the kind of connections with this information to develop a base of knowledge. Daya. Yada is personal knowing. It's being aware. It's understanding. It's developing a relational sense where you can say, I know that person. I'm aware of them. I'm familiar with them. So Yada is becoming familiar with Yahweh. So we choose to invest considerable time and effort to pursue Yada Yahweh. And you have to. I mean, it took me 23 years to write it, and rewrite it, and rewrite it. And Listen, even in the rewriting, and some of the people that maybe listen to this program who are looking for ways that they can belittle this mission that God has assigned us, which, by the way, would not be a good idea because he has a lot to say about it, and God does not take kindly when people rebuke those that he has chosen to work with. It just does not work out well, so I wouldn't do it. But for those that might say, well, yeah, he's admits that he makes mistakes, so what chance, is he right about everything now? And that is something that is extraordinary in and of itself. I'm not aware of anyone else who would have devoted every bit of 5 years to rewriting what he's written. Over the last 23 years, I have devoted every bit of 5 years. And we're talking about 5 years. I'm not paid a dime to do this.
Right.
I work 7 days a week on this. Now, you might say, well, you're not celebrating the Shabbat. Yes, I am.
Well, I guess
Shabbat,
you are.
Shabbat is a verb. And Yahweh does his best work on the Shabbat, and I'm going to be there when he does it. So I do this 7 days a week, 12, 14 hours a day. And I have for all of that time, and over that time, I've learned, constantly learning. That was Dee, the other day, not too long ago, you said, I think we have Shavuah and Teruah wrong. They're both harvests, mm-hmm. and the Christian New Testament is flat out wrong, which I had proven, but I didn't take the next step. That everything that the Christian New Testament says about Pentecost is wrong. It was not fulfilled. And everything that Paul says about Teruah, which he calls trumpets, is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so, part of becoming part of God's family is you walk away from religion and politics. You don't just teleport away. You don't go from one day, you grew up in this culture, and the next day you have no legacy of that culture that's affecting you. So you're constantly refining and growing and learning, which is going to be part of our lives forever. God does not do an information dump where he says, okay, I'm going to scrub every bad thought and every errant conclusion of your life away, and all of a sudden I'm just going to put good stuff in there. No, we still have access to that tree that Adam and Chawa took a bite out of, the knowledge of both that which is productive and beneficial and that which is adversarial to us. And so we're constantly learning and growing, and that means that while you're doing it, you're going to find that there are nuances of things that you perceive to be true that actually are slightly different. And very few people would devote that much time to going back to correcting the record, and we do it as a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big project. And rather than being, oh, my God, we have to go back and edit all these books again because we figured this out. No, it's actually a celebration. We get to correct the record. So
right.
The very attitude that we're devoted to constantly refining the message that we're conveying to Yisrael because of the fact that it's a learning process. And that is the role of a Bashar herald and of a Edah messenger. It's really the purpose of a Zeruah, one sowing the seeds, which are prepared for the harvest. You don't just throw the seeds in the ground. You have to cultivate the ground. You have to remove the weeds. You have to add some fertilizer from time to time. You've got to water them. You have to nurture them. There's a lot that goes in to preparing from the process of unreceptive ground and a bag of seeds, which is the words of God, unreceptive ground are his people in the minds of people around the world. There's a lot that goes into that, and it's a process. And so this is a process. That's why yada is a verb,
mm-hmm.
the process of getting to know Yahweh. We will enter a time where God's going to integrate his Torah instructions inside of us. Even with that great amount of information given to us, we will still spend all eternity learning.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't, eternity would be miserable.
You would.
So
yes, I agree.
This is a process, and we should celebrate it. Listen, if God wanted everything to be right the first time and absolutely perfect, with perfect diction, perfect and complete understanding, and everything precisely accurate, he delivered this message in his own voice.
Mm-hmm.
Israel said, don't do that. And God said, yeah, I understand. I'm fully with you. I will work through people, and I will convey my message through people, which means that I'm going to work with flawed implements. But those flawed implements can be extraordinary. Look how extraordinary Moshe was, how extraordinary Dod was, how extraordinary Hosha and Yashaya, Elia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Extraordinary individuals. And so he can take an ordinary person and make them very passionate and exceedingly effective. And they're in a position where they can be real. They can talk eye to eye with God's people, get their attention, encourage them to walk away from religion and politics, to give Yahweh a chance.
Yeah.
And so this is how Yahweh has chosen to work, and it is, it has borne fruit, and it will continue to bear fruit. So we want to know, we choose to invest the considerable time and effort. This is the entire process. You want to know Yahweh? He is not going to make it easy. Because if it were easy and you could just say, yeah, well, there's the soundbite, I'll accept that, let's go on, then heaven would be filled with all the kind of dimwits that cause this earth to be so hellish.
Yeah.
That's just not going to do that. He's smarter than that.
And work your way there.
Thoughtful individual.
Yeah, you're going to think your way there. Considerable time and effort to pursue Yada Yahweh. The stage of his journey is as sure as sunrise. What he's saying is, I am, this is God speaking, so confident that the plan that I have chosen to execute through the covenant family and that Yada fella is going to prevail because I'm going to give them everything they need and they're not going to shirk their responsibility. They are going to be devoted to this cause, and together, collaboratively, we're going to get it done. And when you realize that we have been given the greatest discovery in human history,
that's true,
and are now in a position to share that with Israel, you can be assured that God has given us the tools and insights we need at this stage of the journey to get it done. Our success, measured by what Yahweh is seeking to achieve, is as sure as sunrise. He will come like the showers of spring rains, because you have to water those seeds before you can gather them for the harvest, by refreshing and renewing those of the land who accepted the source of teaching and guidance, which is on display. It's Yara Eretz, by making the land receptive to the Torah's instructions. Yara is the basis of Torah. It's the verb that underlies Torah. It means source of guidance and teaching, instructions and directions. And Eretz is the land of Yisrael. So as I said, my conclusion that the 2 days that leads to a third is Teruah and Kippurim that lead to Sukkah. This stage of the journey, we are focused now in this prophetic review on the land of Yisrael, refreshing and renewing the people of Yisrael for the Teruah harvest, and for that which is really a gleaning, and then ultimately for the family reunion on the Day of Reconciliations, October 2nd, 6:22 p.m. sunrise or sunset in Jerusalem on October 2nd, 2033. Now, the journey home is all that should matter now. We have less than 10 years left. Let's focus on the journey home. There is so much separating God from his people and so little time left to bridge that gap. And since Yahweh isn't the one who is going to change, the onus is on his people. And that means, to a large degree, the onus is on us. God has tasked us with the responsibility, but also has empowered us to achieve success, to awaken his people, and to call them home. And he revealed to us and to them where to look and how to navigate this divide. And now you and we are privy to both. Well, he is addressing Yahweh in this prophecy, as we have shared so many times, because it is so important to appreciate God never works alone. So he, in this case, also includes Dod by association and those serving him, Moshe, Yada, and Elia, particularly at this time, all of whom will be united in purpose and directed by our king. And since Moshe spoke of this moment in what is now the 18th chapter of Devarim, we should keep Hosea's prophecy in mind, because we will turn to the Torah and consider what it says with regard to Dod. The 18th chapter of Devarim is all about Dod being the antidote for the religious poisons that are killing our planet, and for false prophets. But for now, it's important to recognize that while in the throes of Jacob's troubles, Israel's troubles, many Yehudim will finally seek to Da'ah, know Yahweh, spoken using the genuineness of the call stem, directing our attention to Da'ah, the consistency of the imperfect conjugation, and the volitional nature of the cohortative mood. Israelites will want to be persistently perceptive and genuinely discriminating as they process the information that God has provided for them to consider. And some might say, you know, I just read the Torah, you know, myself. I read the Masoretic text and read it in Hebrew. Goody for you. But you know how much they altered? How much is changed? Are you prepared to strip away the diacritical markings and go back and look at the meaning of each word based upon the letters that comprise that word without the diacritical markings? Are you willing to go to the Dead Sea Scrolls and find every place that the Masoretic text changed the message? Are you willing to consider the full import of each word as that word was defined when it was used, so that you have a complete picture of what God was saying? Are you then willing to tie what God said in the Torah with what he said throughout his prophets together, so that you have a comprehensive picture? Now, if you are, great. I don't think you have the time to do it. I will admit that I've had some other issues come up along the way, like Yahweh asked me to expose and condemn Islam, because without that, Israel doesn't survive. He asked me to expose and condemn Christianity, and written 5 volumes for one, 4 for the other. And Christianity is essential, because Christianity is actually the reason for Rabbinic Judaism. Rabbinic Judaism is a response to the popularity of Christianity, and both had a false Messiah. And it's, unless you understand the replacement theology of Christianity and how Yahweh's Torah and prophets were manipulated, create this myth of a Jesus, and who that myth was covering up, it's very difficult to put everything together to understand what Yahweh was actually offering. So, yes, I do have 9 books that I have rewritten many times beyond just the message that Yahweh is sharing with us. But it's also important to have done what we did in Babel, to eliminate the book of Ezekiel, because if you don't eliminate the book of Ezekiel, you will draw all sorts of wrong conclusions of what's going to happen between now and the end.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's important to come to know who is Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
Because Gabriel is not an angel. And then once you know who he is, and then what he said to Daniel, who was not a prophet, but Gabriel is the
mm-hmm.
Gabor of El, and Yahweh was very clear to tell us in the 89th Mizmor who the Gabor is. Dod, God's most competent and courageous man. When you realize who was the speaker and what subject he was covering, then all of a sudden all the pieces fit together. So, yes, you can do this. And if you were to devote all of your time over the next 10 years, you might be able to get half of what we already have done. Maybe. So, there is a reason that Yahweh says, I want you to read Yada Yahweh.
Yeah.
And it's written in the language that the overwhelming preponderance of Jews speak. Now, it's not true of the Haredim, but God's not interested in them at all. So we don't have any problem there. And it isn't a bowl of honey. God is exceedingly unhappy with the propensity of his people to be religious, and we pull no punches. And the same thing is true with their propensity to be political. And so we lay it on the line. We're not here to draw people in with a bowl of honey. We're here to tell them the truth because there's not enough time left for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since the object of our pursuit is found in the vocabulary that leads to understanding of our God, I'm reminded that our journey began with the commitment to go where his words lead.
Yes.
And we have followed them to Yahweh in full recognition that the path would be rigorous and it would be unpopular because it flows against religious edicts. But in the end, those who invest the time and the energy will all come to Yada Yahweh. And once you know Yahweh, you can't help it. You'll fall in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting read today as I was doing another translation of the 89th Mizmor, which to my mind is the most important piece of literature that exists in the world. And in it, Yahweh twice calls Dod his chosen one. But then when we correct the text of the 89th Mizmor for the Dead Sea Scrolls, we find that Yahweh did all of these things through his chosen one, Dod, on behalf of his chosen ones. And so there are many that Yahweh has chosen to be part of his family. And this is one of the great misunderstandings and the differences between the covenant relationship that Yahweh intends and religion. In religion, you're either compelled to convert, or you're cajoled into a confession of faith. Everything is on the person. God's position is never even asked, never considered. In fact, you don't even need to know God to become part of their religion. With Yahweh, it's quite different. See, Yahweh didn't just give us free will, he has free will. And they're called his chosen ones because he chose them. Yahweh will introduce himself to those who have done the following. You have to have done what Abraham did. You have to have walked away from your country. You have to walk away from Babel, which is the confusing mix of truth and lies, the integration of religion and politics, from societal customs, from the family of man. If you have done those things and you are receptive to listening to God, not praying to him, listening to him, then Yahweh will introduce himself. And from that point, it's all on you. You can then choose to ignore him or to pursue a relationship with him, which is exceedingly consuming. As God said, it'll take an enormous amount of your time. Now, he will repay that time infinitely over, you know, and multiply it by infinity, probably times seven.
Yeah, your
but
investment
nonetheless,
is microscopic.
Yeah. So we need to appreciate that God makes choices. He chooses who he wants to be part of his covenant family, and then it's up to us to respond. And you don't even get the invitation. And by the way, the mikre, the seven moed mikre, they're all invitations. But you don't get the invitation until first you walk away from religion and politics. Why do you think that Yahweh, when he spoke about Pesach, the first of the moed mikre, the door that opens up life, an extension of life, why do you think he said, you do not invite anyone who's not circumcised? Don't do that. Why do you think he said that? Because circumcision is the sign of the covenant. That means that if you're invited to celebrate Pesach, then you have to have embraced the covenant, which means you've agreed to walk away from the family of man, from your country, from Babel, the confusion of mixing truth and lies and integrating religion and politics. You've agreed to do that. You've agreed to walk to Yahweh along the path that he has provided, where the door begins at Pesach, then Matzah and Bukurim, to Shabuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. You've agreed to allow Yahweh to perfect you in that way, with perfection coming on Matzah, leading to your adoption into his family. You've agreed to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant, leading to circumcision of male and of men and women, mothers and fathers agreeing to circumcise their sons on the eighth day so that everyone remembers the importance of the covenant relationship and how it is about being cut. Yahweh cut, karat, the covenant, a sign of circumcision, and it's a place of separation where a procreation of a family is conceived that is set apart from the world, which is why this is the sign. So Yahweh doesn't want you participating in Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim and going on until you're part of the covenant family, until you have decided to separate yourself from the world. So after enduring three millennia of religious rhetoric, a remnant of God's people are providing evidence and reason and giving them a chance during the last day. Or even with the presentation of well over 20,000 pages of amplified translations, some exceedingly profound insights, unheralded insights, and supporting commentary throughout Yada Yahweh, the trek home does not come easily. There are no shortcuts. Now, I've got the seven spirits of Yahweh working for me, and I wasn't given a shortcut. And I'm glad I wasn't. Where would the passion be if everything that you know was just a brain dump?
Mm-hmm.
There's something very special about knowing, and this is something God wants to get across. Everything that I have come to know, sure, he's enabled it. But everything that I have come to know, I came to know in this way, by closely examining, carefully considering Yahweh's testimony. It was all there. Everything we needed to know about Dod, for example, and his role as the sacrificial lamb of Pesach and serving to separate our guilt on Matzah was all there. It's been there for 3,000 years. And I was able to find it by studying what Yahweh said with an open mind. which means every Jew could have done the same thing. And Yahweh wants his people to know that it was there all along. And sometimes you wonder when you read the 89th Mizmor, as open as God was about, yeah, he's my son, he's the Messiah, he's my chosen one, he's the Zeruah, as the sacrificial lamb. We're doing all of this together. And the result is your vindication, your salvation, your reconciliation and the relationship. How is it possible that 3,000 years of Jews haven't been able to figure it out? And I think the answer is what Yeshayah tells us, that Yahweh blinded them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you would say, well, why would Yahweh blind his people to the truth? Because when Yahweh was communicating directly with them, they were still irascible, complainers, and religious. When he established them in Yisrael, they established religions. And can you imagine how much worse Judaism would be if they actually knew God's name?
Yeah.
They would poison it.
Yeah.
What if they actually understood the covenant and they applied all their religious laws to it? It'd be far worse.
Yeah.
What if they actually understood the Mikra? The job would be infinitely harder to call them home. What if they recognized Dode? And then you were trying to refine the truth as opposed to just what I'm sharing is just, well, it's a complete different zip code than where they are. There's no correlation. We're on different planets. And it's such a clean break that it's a much easier story for us to tell, God versus religion, than it would be if they understood any part of this. So there's nothing they got right. A very clean cut, speaking of Karat in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
So the pursuit of knowledge regarding the Almighty requires considerable effort, and that is by design. Eternity is forever, so there must be a filter to preclude those who are lazy, are easily distracted, and who do not enjoy learning. What Hosea recorded Yahweh saying also affirms one of the most controversial aspects of Yada Yawa. I have set dates. So have you, D. And expectations. Mm-hmm. Knowing that the next stage of Yahweh's journey is as sure as sunrise. It wasn't tremendously difficult to figure out. All of the evidence was there. Now, there are some things that you have to have some aha moments. Getting Daniel 9 right and understanding who the speaker is and what he's saying is an aha moment.
Absolutely.
You know, coming to recognizing that the book of Revelation was a research project gone awry helps getting your mind scrubbed of everything that's in Ezekiel helps tremendously. Understanding the correlation between the Torah and the prophets helps tremendously. There are some things that push us into the right direction, understanding that everything revolves around the Moed Mikre, that the Yobel years are essential to Yahweh, that what happened in year 2000 Yah with Abraham and Yishak played out again in exactly that same spot on the exact same day to fulfill Pesach when Dode came as the Zeruah, exactly 40 Yobel thereafter. And 40 Yobel from then is when he's returning to anoint the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. It all fits together as a cohesive whole when you look at the pieces this way, but it... I don't know how many years you spent putting together the timeline, and you're still refining it.
Before I even met Yahweh, I had started. So,
yeah,
I met Yahweh in 2012.
Big projects.
Yep.
So what Hosha has recorded Yahweh saying, it it does affirm that that what we're doing is unique. He gave us, and Hosha was one of those who gave us tremendous insights that help us establish the timing that events are going to play out. And one of the things that we have learned is that Yahweh's journey is as sure as sunrise, and God's return with his son, our Savior and King, is now imminent. It's less than 9 years away. Year 6,000 Yah is approaching. It is year 2033. The Rambam was absolutely out of his ever-loving mind when he came up with his Hebrew years. It's an absolute embarrassment how he did it. And the right way to do it is the way that we have done it. You just go right back to the basis of the Torah, and you follow the Torah and its genealogies all the way through. You mark the important points along the way. Then you listen to what the prophets had to say, and all the pieces fall into place. So God's relationship with his people will be reconciled, and his Torah guidance will be integrated into the lives of his children in year 6,000 Yah on Kippurim, just as he explained. And it is not difficult to ascertain that date. If there was anything that is difficult, it is to ascertain the year of the Shavuah harvest, but it just seems so natural that it would fall 7 years before Yah's return, and that the Teruah harvest and the gleaning, if you will, and the final family reunion would be 3 days in a row leading to Sukkah, just as we have in the spring. So in this light, Motza, which is depicting the next stage of this journey, is based upon Yatza, the verb which describes the Exodus. Means to draw out. Just as Yahweh withdrew his people from Mitzrayim, the crucibles of religious and political oppression, Mitzrayim is based on the plural of the same word that is used to describe the time of Jacob's troubles. So we're going to have a second Exodus. The last one was nearly 3,500 years ago. He is returning to deliver a remnant of his people from religious and political oppression, from the genuine threat of Babylon, in particular, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and progressive politics. In fact, if we were to have the three Babylons, geographic Babylon would be the Islamic Middle East. Political Babylon would be the United States. To some degree, Western Europe, but principally the United States. Religious Babylon, more than anything, the Roman Catholic Church. Further, with Kun, we know that God's arrival is assured. It has been decided, appointed, and established. As surely as the sun rises in the east, Yahweh will return with the Messiah on Yom Kippurim in year 6,000 Yah. It will all lead to the dawning of a new day, the opportunity to return to the garden, come Sukkah, beginning on the Shabbat of October 7th. 2033, of which there will be a lunar eclipse. There will be a marvelous harvest of reconciled Yehudim on Teruah, occurring on a Friday at sunset, September 23rd, 2033, as a dying planet is poised to be bathed in life-giving rains. Beginning 10 days thereafter, beginning on Kippurim, the earth will be restored to the conditions experienced in Gan Eden. Yara refleshed, replete with the ultimate source of guidance and teaching on display. We know this because Yara is the verb Yahweh selected to describe the very purpose of his Torah, to be a source of guidance and teaching. Now, the rain that Hosha is predicting was explained in a book that we, and I've been guilty of this, and I'm really trying to correct that, a book that is so often overlooked, but is just so powerful for this moment in time. Yoel, mm-hmm. Joel.
Yep.
It means Yah is God. As this statement suggests, it will come in two waves, one to redeem and the other to reconcile. And yet, there is more to learn about this day when Yisrael will finally seek to know Yahweh, Yada Yahweh, than just the restoring showers that will fall upon the land in anticipation of the final harvest. So let's consider what the prophet Yoel, Yah is God, had to say. Yoel 1:1. The word of Yahweh, the word of Yahweh. How often have you heard a rabbi say the word of Yahweh?
No.
Have you ever had a Christian say, a priest or the Pope say
the
word
of Yahweh?
No.
We say it because Yahweh said it. Prophets said it because his son said it. It's the dabar, the word, the message, the communication, the speech of Yahweh. Yahweh is God's one and only name. Until you know his name, you do not know him. The first giant stride to knowing God is knowing and using and understanding Yahweh. The word of Yahweh, to show the path to the benefits of the relationship. Asher. Asher is one of the most powerful of all Hebrew words. It is a verb, it is a noun, it is a proper noun, it is a preposition. It is the workhorse, really, of the Hebrew language. It speaks of a relationship between things. It speaks of walking a correct path to get the most enjoyment and benefit out of life. So the word of Yahweh, to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, came to exist, Haya. That's the very basis of Yahweh's name. Yahweh's name is based on the verb Haya. I don't say this because I think it is true. I say this because God said it was true. For Yoel, Yahweh is God, son of Patuth-El, open to God. You want to be part of Yahweh's family. Well, the very first thing you have to do is be open to him. So this is the word of Yahweh to show the path to the benefits of the relationship as it came to exist, Haya, for Yoel, Yahweh's God, son of open to God. That's
great.
A man who was open to God was so unique among Yehudim that he was one of the last three voices, the final three prophets, joining Zechariah and Malachi, circa 500 BCE. He had a great deal to say about Israel's return at this time and addressing those who were open to God. He encouraged all of those to choose of your own volition to listen to this. Leaders of the community, especially those who are prominent and mature, hear and respond of your own accord. Everyone living in and inhabiting the land and earth. Has such as this happened in your days or even in the time of your fathers? Yoel 1:2. Boy, there's a lot in this. I had, for the longest time, just looked at Zaken and had translated it as elders. And I missed the entire intent of it. And the reason I missed the higher intent of it is I really hadn't paid a lot of attention, even though I had translated the passages. Maybe my mind wasn't open or receptive properly at the time. But the Shavuah harvest is a harvest of wheats, plural.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hebrew basis of wheats means to be prominent and mature.
Right.
And so it tells us who is going to be harvested. Those who are prominent with God because they are part of his family. Those who chose to be with Yahweh while they didn't have their backs up against the wall. They chose to be with Yahweh with the information he had revealed through his prophets long ago, and that they have grown in stature by doing what we are doing, which is to study Yahweh's message. And the more you study it, the more you learn. The more you learn, the more you want to share. The more you share, the better you understand. All part of the process. And so this Zacchaean speaks specifically of the prominent and mature. He's speaking of those who are going to be harvested on Shavuot. And it's hear and respond. Azan is one of many Hebrew words to mean to listen. The uniqueness of azan, which is based on the Hebrew word for ear, is to not just hear what is being said, but to respond. Because at this point, you don't have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's speaking now to everyone living in the Eretz, which could be the land or the earth or both. Mm-hmm. But the focus is soon to be the land, while the focus now is the earth. And he's saying, asking the question, but it's a rhetorical question that the answer is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Has anything like this ever happened before? Throughout all time?
No. Never.
And there are now two aspects of this that are unique. There has never been prior a Choder, Nakri, Bashar, Ada, Zeroa sowing these seeds that prepare God's people for the harvest. There has been no one in the history of God's people who has ever come out and said, Dode volunteered to be the Passover lamb and then to serve on Matzah by having his soul take our guilt into Sheol.
Never.
No one throughout all of that time has ever said, these are the dates these things happen, and this is what is going to be accomplished on each of them, and this is the reason why. So that's part of what has never happened before. There has never been a Yada Yahweh before. But by the same token, we are watching the world turn against Israel. You know, October 2nd, 7th, ignited a terrible anti-Semitic storm, understanding that it didn't just begin there. It was there. It just brought it out. And it is a raging inferno that is infecting the world. They're getting more and more vocal. They're calling for the elimination of Israel, which is akin to saying death to the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
As Muhammad said, kill every Jew. This is what we face, and it has never been the case before. Even during the Holocaust, as we moved in Europe through anti-Semitic Europe, and it was all Europe, not just Germany, that turned against Jews and that foisted pogroms on them and the Holocaust on them. When we look at that, it was a group of nations and a group of people within those nations, but guided and led at that time, unleashed, if you will, by one party and one nation. This animosity now towards Israel, this rage against Israel, is worldwide, and it is very broad-based, with some 2 billion Muslims and another 1 billion moronic progressives. And then you even have some right-wing conspiratorial wackos that are have been anti-Israel for a long time. It's collectively, it's probably 4 billion people, including lots of Christians who are still blaming Jews for killing their God, not knowing that their dead God on a stick was nothing but a myth. So we are in uncharted waters as it relates to Israel. It's going to be exceedingly difficult to be a Jew. That's why Yada Yahweh exists at this time. It is your safety net. It is your safe harbor. It is your opportunity to survive this onslaught. And so there has never been a time like this. And part of the reason is that heretofore, the opportunity, the period of time that you had as anyone in the world, but particularly a Israelite. To get to know Yahweh and make the right call was thousands of years. And now you have less than a decade. Time is coming to a close. Your last chance is less than 10 years away. And if you're listening to this message in 2026, then you're 7 years away. In 2030, then you're 3 years away. Time is coming to a close, which means the message has to be much more impactful. It has to be much more definitive, bolder, more complete, delivered with greater confidence than ever before, with the power of some 35 books substantiating everything that we say in this program, all of which is available for you to read for free on the yadayah.com site. Nothing like this has ever occurred previously. There are a number of initial thoughts just worth noting in this statement, because this prophet, Yoel, he's a, my wife would call him an ENTJ. Time is money. I'm going to get right down to business. I'm routinely accused of being an ENTJ, and I probably am based upon all the things that she has to say about it. But for us, you know, time is money. You don't waste it. You don't squander it. There's a job to do, and you go about completing the job. My guess is that Yahweh, too, if he were to take the test, would also be an ENTJ. It's for darn sure that that Dode was one. We'll get along great. But there were a number of initial thoughts that Yoel, just getting right down to business, throws up. To begin, Yoel is asking us to listen to what Yahweh has to say, especially at this time, like no other time. And he is directing our attention to HaZaken, to the prominent and mature among us. Now, with Yahweh, to be prominent and mature means that you are not only in the covenant, but you've been studying Yahweh's words, and you're prepared to share and teach them. And this is because, as we will learn as we reach Yoel 2:19 in this review, the grain represented by the chittahim, wheats, gathered during the fulfillment of Shavuah are prominent and mature individuals from Yahweh's perspective. That is to say, members of the covenant family stand up and stand out. By having studied Yahweh, they have grown and matured in their relationship with God to the point they're willing and able to share it passionately. Yoel is quick to point out that listening and learning matter when we respond appropriately. And in keeping with the theme of the Shavuah harvest, his message is for Kol Yashab Ha'eretz, everyone inhabiting the land and the earth today. Yoel insists that he really wants you to know that he is not just offering good news, but there's a prophetic warning here. He's revealing that we're about to enter a period that has never occurred before. And again, there just isn't the bad news of the onslaught of how COVID changed the world forever in 2020, depriving people instantly of free will and their livelihoods, and putting governments in complete control over people's lives, and people willing to sacrifice their freedoms and their livelihoods based upon a virus that turned out to be no more deadly than the flu. Changed things forever. Mm-hmm. And then you had the Islamic assault in Israel of 2023, which led to anti-Semitism to a degree we have never seen before. I would call it a shit show, except they would have trouble with that on some of our broadcast platforms. But it's happening at a planetary scale. Actually, Yahweh has no problem with that term. He refers to both animal and human excrement quite regularly to explain what he thinks of the religious, and particularly when the religious are praying to him. Says, you think you have rubbish all over your faces.
Thanks,
but we are entering uncharted waters and hurricane conditions. But at the same time, we have a steady hand on the tiller. We have access to the truth about Father and Son. Now, this forecast of a turbulent future is underscored by the rhetorical question, has such as this happened in your days or even in the time of your fathers? This is significant because no ethnicity in human history has been treated worse than Jews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not saying this is worse than the enslavement in Mitzrayim in Egypt. This is worse than the Assyrian assault where they put rings through your noses and had you march naked through the desert and turned you into slaves. It's worse than the Babylonian captivity. It's worse than the great assault of the Greeks. It's worse than the unimaginable horror of millions of Jews dying under the invasions of the Romans, three of them. It's worse than the great torment of when the first Muslims came raging across out of Arabia and into the promised land and slaughtered a third of the planet. It's worse than what the Ottoman Empire did in Israel. Worse than the Crusaders by a long shot. It is worse than the anti-Semitic European experience after the diaspora leading to pogroms and the Holocaust. Hard to imagine, but in our time, worse than the Holocaust. And that means that Israel as a nation is going to be so attacked that it will be like Jews during the Holocaust where there was no place to go. No one welcomed them. No one wanted them. And that's what Jews living outside of America don't seem to grasp, is that without Israel, they're right back into the fix that they were in during the Holocaust, where they were rounded up and exterminated because there was no place to go. Now there is.
Right.
That's why Yah was calling his people home. Don't sacrifice your country. And so this is the last hurrah. It's the, and also it's the final herald. It's our one last remaining opportunity. Regarding its approach, Yoel says, recount it accurately to your children. Let your children tell their children and their children to the last generation so they do not get left behind. You don't want to be left behind this time. There's only two outcomes, the extermination of your soul or its incarceration. Both of those are, well, one's unfortunate, the other's horrific. And so those are the only two options left other than to choose Yahweh. And unfortunately, very few will choose him, but enough will to satisfy our God. So it bears repeating, to the last generation so that they do not get left behind. There will not be many more tomorrows. You have very little time to get this right. And far too many remain inebriated, their thinking dulled by political and religious diatribes. Well, I tell you what, you listened to Joe Biden give a speech, and it'll do this to you. Well, you listened to Donald Trump give a speech. Let's be fair; You listen to him speak, and you want to say, you know, I think I'd prefer to scratch my nails against a blackboard. It is so sad what has become with us. But can you imagine a time where you've got a narcissist who will say anything to anybody for any reason? He just hates everybody, can't wait to find his next enemy. And Trump is silent. His opponent did such bodily injury that his advisors are saying, you know, at this point, pal, you just don't need to say anything. Don't blow this. Don't open your mouth. They waved the white flag. Again, it's like weekended Bernie's. Awaken and choose to take action. You who are intoxicated, weep and wail all who drink in association with the new sweet wine. For indeed, it is cut off and severed from your mouth and thus your speech, because a large group of non-Israelites has come up against my land, a potent force of a great multitude, so numerous as to be uncountable. It has sharpened teeth, the piercing incisors of a destructive beast, and it has the fangs of a violent animal with a loud roar. Yoel witnessed the thousandfold continuation of October 23rd, 2023. It's going to happen in 2027, I think, in June, actually, of 2027 is when I think this is going to occur. The animals are Muslims.
Right.
They will be screaming Allahu Akbar, which means that Allah is greater than Yahweh, which is pretty tall cotton since Allah's a snake. and it will be exceedingly traumatic, weep and wail. It'll be intoxicating because this force that's going to be raised against Israel is more numerous than can be counted. You know, this October 23rd, as horrific as it was, and it was horrific, worst treatment of any people by a group of savages in modern history. There were only 3,000 to 3,500 of them. That's a minuscule number this time. There'll be closer to 350,000 of them. Could even be more. And this is a war that the IDF cannot protect Israel. The Iron Dome is going to be rendered obsolete. They're going to be 100 times the bombardments. There are not enough interceptors. Israel's cities will be ablaze. And Israel doesn't know how to fend off an invading terrorist militia. Israel's gotten quite good at fighting. You want to fight fighter to fighter? You want to fight tank to tank? Israel will whip your behind. But if you want to fight jihadist against the IDF, Israel is absolutely terrible at it. And this time there won't be 3,000 of them. There will be 300,000 of them at the very least. Just think of the savagery that will be perpetrated at that time. So when I say that, and I did predict October 7th, 2023, a year before it occurred. I wrote about it and yada yada, spoke about it on this program, and how it would happen under the cover of bombardments and how they would, jihadists would take outlying communities and take hostages, and that the IDF would be ill-prepared to defend Israel as a result of that strategy. Nothing's going to change. Israel is going to be attacked, invaded with a flood of jihadists. That's why I took the time to rewrite Goddamn Religion. Prophet of Doom, Becoming Goddamn Religion is 5 volumes. It's essential that Israel know its enemy. It's Islam. And there's 2 billion Muslims, and they hate God's people. there. They began perpetrating genocide against Jews, and they are committed to it to this day. They have sharpened teeth. They're piercing incisors of a destructive beast. It has fangs of a violent animal with a loud roar. It's a great multitude, too numerous, so as to be uncountable. While horrific and inexcusable, the Islamic savagery displayed on, before, and after October 7th, 2023 has been all too common in the annals of history, because the Egyptians, Philistines, Assyrians, Babylonians, the Greeks, Romans, Roman Catholics, and the first Muslims, the Ottomans, the Europeans, the Nazis, and present-day Muslims have been inhumanly brutal. Therefore, the great multitude lashing out and piercing Israel presented represents an attack vastly more debilitating and horrifying, with 100 times, perhaps 1,000 times, more armed belligerence and aerial bombardments. Although, to be clear, these animals biting Jews while screaming, Allahu Akbar, will continue to be Muslims. Yahweh equates Geffen vines with the beast, with the best of Israel, beast or the Muslims, the vines are the best of Israel, growing out of the garden he and his son planted along the slopes of Zion. Similarly, the Ta'ne'ah fig is symbolic of Israel's health and ability to produce good fruit. Both are in for a beating. Muslims are Muslims, after all, and it's going to get horrifically bad. It says, my vines will be set up for appalling desolation. My fig tree will become a splintered stump, snapped off and cut down, stripped bare, exposed and condemned, rejected and hurled away, its branches bleached and whitewashed. Even the sacrificial offerings which bestow a share and the drink offerings which anoint will be withheld from the family of your God. Yoel 1:13. We are within a minute or two of this program ending this evening. We can't go beyond the 2 hours that are ultimately allotted to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it's a good idea either. It's just too much information for people to process. So we will return to this statement this time next week, with Yahweh forecasting through the prophet Yoel that Israel is going to be devastated. It's not just the kibbutzim where the vines will be defoliated. The fig tree representing Israel itself will be splintered. The stump snapped off and cut down. Yahweh will spare a remnant of his people. There will be a teruah harvest, sure as sunrise. And there will be a family reunion on Kippurim. But a lot of Jews are going to die between now and then. And the planet is going to be engulfed in horrible war. So it is important that you know who Yahweh is and how you can avoid it, because it is not Yahweh who is doing any of these things. He is the one who will eventually stop it. It's man creating hell for his fellow man. Well, with that thought, we will say good night. Have a wonderful rest of your Shabbat. Celebrate it with Yahweh. And we thank you for listening to this program, wherever you may be in this world. Be safe. Be with Yahweh. Listen to what your God has to say. Good night.
Good night, Yada. Good night, Dee.
Night, guys.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.